Welcome back to another episode of Life with Your Dog. My name's Panos. Joined with my brother, Luke Badman. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Anzac
Day. I love saying your last name.
Badman, yeah. Luke Badman.
I feel a lot more of a better person around you.
Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day. So I have two brothers, right? So three boys. So we're bad men, right? We grew up as males with that name, but now we've all had daughters. So I was thinking, like, I wonder how the school kids will react to the girls having the name Badman,
because that's hilarious.
They're the first Badman girls by birth in like one or two generations.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you need to have really good friends with some Goodmans, and then you can balance out. That'd be cool. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, the dad jokes ripping right into them.
I know.
Well, today's episode, I think. And I'm pretty sure we haven't really discussed as a whole full-length episode about stopping a dog fight and preventing a dog fight and just everything that kind of entails. And it's one of those questions that I get asked, and it's probably the most difficult answers to give, because a fight of any caliber has so many different variables every single time. There's never usually two exact same fights, because, and we'll talk about dogs,
he's
bear cat, because usually the two dogs aren't the same breed, or they're not the exact same dog, and it's a different environment. And if the dogs even fought the first time, then the second fight is a different type of fight because of the experience from the first one. And there's so many more things that need to be considered about how to stop a dog fight, that just off the bat, for me to say, this is how you stop a dog fight, or how you fight in general, requires like years of training. So, you know, even how to use your body and to use your mind to be able to prevent an altercation from happening, or to stop it while it's happening. It's a whole.
Yeah. I've never had to break up a dog fight. So I'm keen to learn myself.
Yeah. Look, I think, number one thing that you need to consider when it comes to any of this is your attitude. Are you willing to jump into the fight? Are you willing to get bitten? Are you willing to get hit? Are you willing to get, you know, really badly injured, life-threatening injuries maybe? You know, you have to consider that maybe prior, maybe now while you're listening to it. Consider it now so you don't have to make the decision in the moment. Because we do live here in Sydney, Australia, we live in a pretty safe environment relatively. We're not facing danger just walking to the bus stop. You're not, like, most of us aren't particularly walking around thinking someone's going to hurt me today.
There's plenty of dog fights around there, for sure.
For sure. But just from the human element, like, I just think live in quite a safe, secure
Depends
environment.
Depends on the part of Sydney.
Yeah, and 100%. So, of course,
you live in pretty safe areas, for sure. Yeah.
100%. And, of course, I'm talking from a general perspective, from the people that I'm seeing, like, so the areas that I service, and it's the majority of metropolitan Sydney. And, of course, we're not talking about, you know, rougher neighbourhoods and things like that, totally.
Yeah, the Shire and St. George are pretty.
But even then, it's not like certain parts of Brazil, you know, like, that's a different level of, like, any of our rough neighbourhoods would be child's play compared to other parts of the world, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
So with that, we don't share this. Like, I just find that when most people leave the house, they're just not feeling like anything bad's really going to happen to me. That's just the mindset is like, good things are going to happen. Let's go out. We're going for a walk. This is awesome. So you have to be thinking, as soon as you leave the house, and especially when you have a predator on the end of your leash, you have now become a target to other predators.
Yeah.
So you're walking down the street, automatically you've put yourself out there for drama to come your way. So that's
keenly aware of what every other dog is going to do when it sees, sniffs, or hears shadow, right? I mentioned just before we hit record that I got the scooter. We've been riding that with Shadow, and it's like a massive park, and the bottom half of that park is off leash. So there's a lot of dogs in general. Like, the upper half is on leash, the bottom half is off leash. So even the upper half, the big track around it, there's a lot of dogs. And, like, a lot of dogs, they hate it when we go past them on the footpath. They're going to react to that movement, right?
Yeah, so the faster you go in a more dense environment, which was like the next point, is like, which environment are you in, will determine how much more of a risk of a dog fight that's going to occur. So I guess just the point there is that, are you willing to jump in now for whose dog? Are you jumping in keenly for your dog? Yeah, I'll jump in for my dog. Are you jumping in for someone else's dog? Then you're like, depends on the dog, depends on the situation, depends on you as a person. Like, where are you at? What have you got to lose? You know, so I think there's a few things that you need to consider, and that can be quite confronting in the moment. And I guess that's why I thought I'd start off with the mental side of it, which sometimes you would think, let's just prepare the hardest part of it towards the end. I think the hardest part is deciding, are you jumping into this? And of course, we'll talk about some strategies, sir, because you may not want to jump in because you don't know what to do. And there are, we'll share some old school, old wives' tales sort of myths of how to stop dog fights, and maybe things that may not work as good as a couple of suggestions that I'll give. But just make sure that you're mentally and also, I'd say, physically prepared. What if you're not physically able to stop the dog fight? So you jump in because you have a big heart, but your muscles and your bones aren't strong enough. So then you just get annihilated. And a lot of times people get bitten by their own dogs when they're trying to stop the dog fight. Dogs panicking, freaking out, seeing red, adrenalized. He's just redirecting and biting on anything that he can, even if you're trying to pull him away or whatever. So if you're not prepared physically, how much are you training? Are you strong? Are you strong enough to pick a dog up? You know, like now maybe under adrenaline, you have the energy to and the capability to do something extraordinary. But then you may do it and hurt yourself. A good injury may happen after. Again, for some people may say, I don't care how injured I get, I'm jumping in for my dog. I'm like, cool. But you have to also think about the long term. What if you, like, you know, bust your back, you know, break an arm, or then you can't work. You know, so you just got to think about those things in prior to the event. But as we mentioned before, the environment. In which environment are you walking in? If you feel like your dog's reactive and potentially aggressive, or isn't, maybe he's just, you know, cool, calm, but you know there's a certain part of your area where there are more off-lead dogs and there are more incidences occurring because there's a high population, so many dogs in a confined area, so many resources to be competing for, you know, and obviously, everywhere that surrounds the dog park is usually the place where dogs fight. So check the environment that you're in, and your situational awareness has to be sharp. Depending on which environment you are would depend on how much awareness you have or that you're exercising. If you have a very quiet neighborhood and a quiet park, your awareness of looking around you may be so much smaller than when you're at the park riding Shadow on the scooter. Checking the environment the entire time while you're going. You're at fast pace, so you're going to be seeing more people, more dogs more quickly. So you need to see what's happening in front of me on the side. What's my dog doing? You know, we've discussed in earlier episodes, but the three spinning wheels, environment, dog, and you, which influences your dog's behavior and the dogs around you. So don't be paranoid when you're out with your dog, but be looking around. You're walking down the street, look ahead of you, check behind you, check down on the sides, what's happening across the road.
Situational awareness. I think we did an episode on that too, didn't we?
We did a whole episode on it, and I'm all for it because it's not just for dogs, but it's for life. Check what's happening. And to entertain that, when you're walking around, don't be like scanning to find threats and problems. Look around Look around your environment. Sometimes we look only the thing that's in front of us or the floor in front of us or hopefully not your phone or whatever. But when you're out walking, you scan your environment, because if you can see the potential threat coming towards you, now you have heaps more options. But if you're walking around with your head in the sand and out of nowhere, the dog jumped out and bit your dog, which it can happen. Dogs come out of driveways and around corners and out of bushes. Like, these things happen.
Yeah.
But most of the time you can see the dog running towards you, or you've walked straight into a dog situation. So keep your eyes peeled and your ears sharp. Maybe no headphones in, you know, when you're out walking. I don't really like having headphones in when I'm walking anywhere, and because I want to know what's happening around me. And if I'm listening to something,
I put one in. So you can say I've got one AirPod in.
Yeah, and one's cool. And I would have it like on the ambient sound so you can hear what's happening around you. Mm. Just because sometimes, you know, while you're walking and you're listening and you're focusing on one thing, even with one, your focus goes into the hearing of the thing and not the environment around you. If I'm listening to something when I'm out on the walk, not all the time, like most of the time I'm not listening to something, but if I am, I'll just have it playing in my pocket and then I can hear it, but it's in the environment as well. You know what I mean? And I think that's just a, that's just how I like to do it. So before we talk about what to do if there's a dog actually on another dog or on a person and you need to get them off, we'll talk about stopping it from occurring.
Just before it happens, yeah.
And I've stopped heaps of dogs from biting on other dogs. I haven't been able to, and as I said before, every single time it's a little bit different. So it's hard to say this is the one thing that works all the time. But I'll share a quick little example, and I'm not sure, you can tell me if I, if I've told this recently or not, but we're walking down the street with a client and she has like a little Shih Tzu thing, and we went close to the house where the German Shepherds are. We're doing some counter conditioning sort of desensitization techniques and getting the dog focused on her because the dog knows that there's three dogs there and he loses his mind. Anyway, so we did some stuff and we're like, yeah, cool. That was like, that's what I showed her. That's what I want you to be practicing around here. And when you encounter dogs, whatever. We went back up the street just prior to pulling Chili out, and we were probably almost 100 meters away from that house.
Yeah.
And I just saw this shepherd screaming down the street, just running straight for her. So I was probably about 5 meters in front and she was behind me. And as the dog's running full speed, tail up, ears forward, like full intent, locked into the dog, and there's heaps and heaps and heaps of times that I've stopped sort of situations like this, but this is the most recent one. And this is like an attitude one that, that I thought would be good to share. So as he's running, I've got a leather leash around me as my spare leash. And as he's running, I've unclipped it. I've jumped in front of the dog's line of attack.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, big hands, big voice. And I've like jumped in front of him to like stop him in the flow. And a lot of the times you can go, bah, and the dog's like, whoa. Like they haven't really noticed you do that. Then they kind of wide berth, or they may stop a little bit. They may stall. Some dogs will see that and they're like, bah, and they'll run away. I've jumped in and gone, boy, boy, boy. And then his eyes just went bush and it's locked onto me, but hasn't changed his pace, just running full speed. And I was like, shit. And I didn't see this as a failure in the moment. I was just like, I don't know if I want to cop all of that brunt right now. Like I wasn't really prepared for that. So as I've like got his attention and he's like run right towards me, I kind of escaped him. I backed up, like I've kind of twisted my body.
Mm.
And then he's like run towards my client, which was probably like 3 meters from me at that moment. And then as like the dog kind of bypassed me, she's picked her dog up. And then the moment she's picked the dog up, I've just jumped in and put the boot into the dog to stop it from actually getting her dog. So dogs run, like dogs coming at me because I've come into his line of fire. I've moved out of the way. And then as I've moved, I've followed it up and then kicked him into the ribs, which then was allowed me to use my leash, bang it on the ground. And then like I would have whack the dog on the snout if I had the opportunity, but because I had already put my presence in and my attitude was like, boom, I'm in to like stop you. And right there in that moment, it wasn't to grab him, but was to get him away from my client and the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got the dog up in her arms. And now the dog's like trying to get up and I've put the boot in, I've used the leash. And then he's like, oh, what the hell? So he went around me and then there happened to be a telegraph pole right next to where me and the dog is. So I whacked it with the lead and I've like fought, like gone into him. He's like, ah, and then he ran off. And in the moment, I'm like simultaneously yelling at the owner. He's like, he just wants to say hi. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
He was so rude. I was so angry. There was no apology. He didn't even try to get the dog. I made the dog run back.
What was the breed again?
Big German Shepherd. He looked cross with something because he looked thicker, not as like athletic looking, but he was tall, like at least up to my hip. So, or maybe just a fat German Shepherd, working line.
Yeah, right. What suburb was that in?
Like San Susie, Cobra. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so my point of that in that situation there was I was willing in the moment to go, hey, I'm going to stop this dog. And then as he was like just fully staring into me, like prey locked onto me almost, and then like ran towards me to be like, hey, I'll just push you out of the way, whether he was going to bite me or not. I don't think I was willing to cop all that injury with the ill preparedness that I had. I had no like actual thing to like block him with. If there was like a chair around, maybe I could use that, or a table, or if there was like, you know, like a human body I could use. No, I'm joking. I mean, if it was like something I could use to like create away for a stick, then at least I could have like run at him and utilized it. But because I just had my flesh to kind of stop him with, I felt like I don't want to like be so injured where like I won't be able to work. And like these moments, like thinking, oh, Leonardo, no, back that out of the way. Like I'm not going to be a hero. Admittingly, if it was, you know, let's just say 10 years ago, I probably would have just jumped on the dog, like straight out, just run and jumped on him. And I'm not just trying to sound like I'm a hero, but I just felt like I had less to lose then. And maybe I was younger, so more eager, maybe a bit more like, yeah, you know, who cares about getting bitten? I got bitten so many.
Not fully formed prefrontal cortex.
I think somewhere along those lines. And also like, you know, not
knowing. Well, it's a thing. If you're under, is it 24, I think, for males?
25, yeah. I heard, yeah.
24, 25, yeah.
Yep. It's legit. You're not fully formed, so you can't make proper adult decisions.
You don't generally see the downside to.
And that would be for a dog, because like they look pretty big at like 2 years old, but their neocortex, their brain hasn't fully formed until
about three, right? Yeah.
Three is the maturity. Yeah. So So my point is that I was in that moment, I was fearful to get hurt, and now I jumped in the car, like because I was quite adrenalized. Like when I get adrenalized, my lips go real dry and cracky and go a bit white. And I just felt that. And I was like, oh, and I had to like cotton mouth. Yeah. And I had to like deal with like two more sessions after it. And now I'm adrenalized going to sessions. Like, you know, so it affects the rest of the day. Yeah. But I jumped in the car going, I bitched it. Like I fully jumped out of the dog's way. And I was putting it on myself going, hey, like what's wrong with you? But then I thought, well, I didn't do the wrong thing. And also, so on one end, I felt like how can I be so hard on myself? Like I didn't stop the random dog from getting up to my client. The dog didn't bite the dog didn't bite the owner. So it was a win.
Yeah. You prevented
big fail though, because we're trying to desensitize that dog to that street, to those dogs behind that house. Yeah. And that dog ran up and then screwed the whole session. So like, it wasn't a good, like, look, these things happen. So we had to recover the dog and immediately we continued our training and the dog was a bit shaken up. The girl was shaken up. We're back and forth, pulled Chili out. The session didn't go too bad. But it certainly did screw up what we were trying to achieve. So I was annoyed about that. But I was just thinking about it, thinking like, what could I have done different? How could I? And I assess it because I am quite hard on myself in that regard. So that was an attitude situation. But also the attitude was I didn't like get scared and then run away. Is that I like to think in that moment, did I stall the dog even a little bit? So usually in that moment, I didn't stall him enough. But I felt like if I didn't get in front, then I probably would have been in a dodgier situation to stop it, the follow-up. So a lot of the times, we'll give another example when, and remember I was talking about the Christmas Day, riding my bike with Chili, running down. I've jumped off the bike. In that moment when I've jumped in front of that dog, now that dog had it, like he stalled, he backed up a moment. Like he was able to reassess, oh, I've got a new threat to deal with. And in that moment, I had the leash and I was able to leash him up. So having a spare leash, having that heavy leather lead with like a big brass buckle on it really helps because, you know, you've got something to kind of create a bit of distance and space. And you can also use the leash to get the dog under control. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in Australia, we're not allowed to, you know, have a firearm.
Yeah,
so anything. Sometimes maybe in America or any other parts of the world, maybe that's a part of something that you're legally allowed to do. I don't know. Mm. So I can't comment on it. But here we have to go barbaric. So we use either a leash or a stick. Another option could be a boot. Yep. And again, what's the aftermath of anything? Are you going to come up to a dog and kick it or punch it? And now the dog's like, now I'm going to attack you. And have you got a plan for that? Because, you know,
it makes me reconsider going out with Shadow with just slides on, you know?
Yeah, slides suck bad. And it's so comfortable after wearing boots or shoes all day. The last thing I do is wear more shoes to walk out. I love to walk barefoot, but yeah, that's a bit of a conundrum, you know? So I think in the moment of, and anyway, it could also be you're now walking up to the dog, kicking the dog off your owner. You're in the right to be able to defend somebody else when they're vulnerable. And now the owner comes and wants to punch you in the face. So now what do we do? Like, do you have a plan for that? Do you know how to fight people? Like, if you don't know how to fight people now, what are you going to, like, what are your options? So, you going to call the cops? Are they going to come within 7 seconds to sort the situation? How's what going to happen? So when people say, what do I do to stop a dog fight? We're like, well, how much training have you done? And I ask people, what would you do if a man came up to you and grabbed you with intent and punched you in the face? Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to grapple him? Are you going to strike him? Are you going to run? Are you going to use weapons? And then if you are going to do any of those, which ones are you going to do? Tell me. You can't tell. You have to role play it. Mm. And every role play, every sparring session looks different.
Mm.
And so it's just like our training, just like what self-defense training is all about, is drill a whole bunch of different scenarios, understand different positions from different takedowns from different positions, and strikes from all different positions and different weights and sizes and different experience levels far out. We're talking about a full-time endeavor. You have to be passionate enough to understand about martial arts, self-defense, and you may get lucky and just go ape shit and take the fight out. You may think you're a good street fighter. Maybe you have good intent. So there's just so many things to it. But when most people ask me, most people that don't know what to do don't have any experience in fighting, because if they did, they would have some sense of self to be like, mm-hmm. hey, if the dog came to me, don't worry. Some people just got the attitude they'll be savage anyway. They don't need training.
Mm, mm, mm.
Training would help their technique be better, but they've got the attitude, the heart. So if you're, yeah, does that make sense? Have I gone right?
Yeah. No. Keep going.
Coffee's kicking in. So the next one, environment, tools, leash, stick. We've mentioned this like a bunch of times before. When you see an old person walking their dog and their big long stick, the stick isn't to be used on their dog. The stick is generally to be used on other dogs to keep them away. So if you are a little bit paranoid and there's a couple of incidents that are happening around your area, maybe walking around with a hiking stick. Hiking stick kind of makes it look like you're not an odd person walking around with a stick. Yeah, it looks a bit more legit. And I don't know, modify it to suit your needs. I'll leave it at that. Glenn Cook, Canine Paradigm, was discussing this answer one day, and he mentioned having like those little tiny umbrellas, you press a button.
They open themselves, self-opening. Yeah.
So having a little tiny one like that, desensitize your dog to it, like opening up so that your dog doesn't have a bad experience. But he said, odd thing is that using a barrier like that, a dog doesn't know what to do. And if the dog's not proper 100% serious and or trained, like opening an umbrella, first of all, it deploying, boom, just like that can be a shock. But also you've actually created a bit of a physical space. The physical space isn't going to be like, now the dog will never get past my umbrella, but at least it buys you some time. And that's my point about what I was trying to say before as well. Is like when you jump in front of the dog and you have that attitude to advocate for your dog and your people and whatever it is, and you're stalling, you're hoping that the dog goes wah and then shits itself and runs away, or at least they stop for a moment. That stop for a moment kind of shows you where we're at. The dog doesn't stop, stares at you, and continues running. You're like, ooh, it's a little bit more than I was anticipating. And most dogs, you make a big loud noise and a big body language and just stare into their eyes and like run at them. Most dogs aren't serious enough to like go, yeah, baby. Now, if the dog is, then you're kind of screwed too.
You're about to find out. Yeah.
You know, it's like, do you comply and let it happen? Like it's a very difficult, confusing and emotional kind of decision to make. And I like to carry like a little tactical flashlight. I think it's called ProTac, is the brand. And it's got like little
prongs. The strobing one? Oh.
Well, like it does strobe light, but the light that you press is, so the strobe is not as powerful as like, there's different options, but I keep it on the lightest. The brightest light on it, brightest option is 1200 lumens, I believe.
Okay. Is that bright?
Bro, it lights up the whole street.
Yeah.
Like I did it from arm's length away into my eyes, and for 5 minutes I had a red ring of like Mordor in front of me.
Be careful with that.
Yeah, that was a very bad decision. So anyway, I don't think whether the light is going to stop a dog. I'm not using the light to stop a dog from getting to us, but that light, I don't know, gives me a little bit of something to see at nighttime. I want to find my dog's poo, find the dog's ball is all I've used it for currently, but I've got something that's shining like at the end of that. It's aeroplane aluminium, which is quite strong, and it's got like prongs on it. So again, I've got something as a force multiplier for if I need to use it. Yep. Whether I'm going to use it or not, who knows? I think it's really good if I'm walking at nighttime and there's a dodgy person approaching me and I could shine the light on them. I can see them. They can't see me with that such brightness. And then that can give me some time to walk away and run away. He runs up closer, then I can like strike and use this as a bit of an extra something. I wouldn't really be like using that on a dog. But again, I'm just telling you what I keep on me. That's legal and in New South Wales. I've seen a video of a dog attack, like a pity running out, I think it was in America, runs out of a house, grabs a five-year-old by the arm or like by the torso, just grabs her and just shaking her down in the car park. The dad's like lifted the girl going, what the fuck, pulls out his knife and just gone to town on the dog. After like four or five stabs, the dog just freaked out and ran away. Again, I'm not saying they're like, you know, fire out. We're talking about fighting. So that could be pretty graphic, pretty gruesome to some. And that could be like, as a father, I'd do anything to get a random dog off my child. I don't care about anything really, more importantly than my son. And you know, so I'm not saying in Australia, in New South Wales anyway, you're not allowed to carry a knife. So I've got a flashlight.
You can't carry knives.
I've got a flashlight, maybe, you know what I mean? And that may sound lame, but at least having something on you helps you. Or if it is at nighttime and you got to look for a dog, you got to see what's actually happening. I think more eyeballs, especially when it's darker, is a good choice. And the things are pretty small, fits in a pocket. It's not one of those big, huge things. So we'll talk about when the dog is on an actual dog. But do I have to explain any other tools? Do you have any other ideas?
Leash, umbrella, stick, torch.
There was a time when I was sitting at
closed toe shoes, I think, is a good takeaway from this.
Yep, definitely. 100%. I was in a client's house and there was this weird looking dog. I believe he was German Shepherd cross greyhound, odd dog, but he was like really tall, and he'd been quite reactive to dogs, to people, and he has shown some aggression, if I can remember correctly. This is quite a few years ago, and as I'm like, all right, cool, like we had a little chat, we did some stuff, I'm like, all right, let's go outside and start the session. So I stood up and then bent down to go grab my bag. As I bent down to grab my bag, the dog come from around the table, saw me bending over, and just all I saw was his white pearls, probably about 30 centimeters from my face. He just jumped at me.
Wow.
About to bite my face. So in that moment, I had my bag like on my left-hand side and he's coming from my right. I've stood up, and as I've pivoted out, I've like replaced my body with my bag and just threw it at him and grabbed the chair and threw it towards him to create a bit of space. And I'm like, oi! And the dog's like, bah! And then he ran off. So if I knew he would have done that, that dog would have been outside on a leash or something. Like these days, I make sure. Now, again, the dog wasn't like heaps dodgy when I walked in. It was kind of like an opportunistic moment for him, I guess. But I'm a lot more safer now, so I'm not saying you should throw bags and chairs at dogs. All right. So I'm just trying to, you know, be politically correct, you know. But you got to use what works. If you have something coming towards you, you use what it is that you need. If it's a chair, if it's a table, if it's an item in the kennels, they use big bin lids as like a bit of a shield. If you're getting into a dog and you need to grab a bowl or grab the dog and you got the pole and you got that shield to kind of stop the dog from actually getting you. But it creates an allusion to the dog that there's something bigger in front of you. It really helps. So that's that's basically what I'm trying to say here, is that if you're using a tool, it's typically to keep the dog not from hurting you, because using a stick's an extension of your arm. The dog can bite the stick but not hurt you. You can also gain a bit more distance. You can also use it as a force multiplier and actually like strike or, you know, create like big kind of movements so the dog doesn't kind of get knocked by it. Or using the leash, it's a lot more flexible. It's a lot more shorter, but you know, you can actually utilize that to get the space or to actually get the dog on the leash, which is going to get me to the next point, is two different ways that I would say there's one lower level and one higher level of stopping a dog once the dog's actually committed to biting and not letting go. Just be mindful and remember that there's no such thing as lockjaw. Dogs don't have a locking mechanism in their jaw, just some dogs. Bully breeds in particular will bite and just not let go. Like, just they don't let go. Like, what the hell is wrong with this dog?
But it's not locked.
It's not locked. Like, he can let go if he wants to let go.
Yeah.
He's not locked in. Mm. But it seems like he's locked in because he's not letting go.
He's committed to it.
Yeah. especially like, you know, look at a Pitty or a Staffy, American Staffy. The muscles in their head are so thick and big to kind of hold that poundage.
Yeah.
Now, like,
that's why they got that head shape.
Yeah, exactly. So, so dog grabs on, is not letting go. Now, sometimes what you could do is if there's one dog on top of another or two dogs locked on top of each other, let's just say one's on and the other one's not biting. You walk up to the dog, and wheelbarrowing a dog is getting your hands and putting it on the dog's knees. Don't put it on the dog's feet, because if you pull up with the dog's feet, you may hyperextend their leg and like tear their whole leg apart. Oh. Depends on how much you don't like the dog, right? But come up to the dog's knees. I think you want the knees as well, so you can get more leverage over the dog's body, where if you grab his foot, they can pull back and slip it out. But grabbing a dog's knees, lifting it up, and then pushing the dog into the ground, usually as soon as you grab those knees and lift up, they're going to be like, what the hell is that? And they may let go. And they, guess what? They're coming to bite your hand now. So they may go, what the hell? And then as they turn around, you start to spin the dog around. And then again, you have to now go, well, what are you going to do now? Now you're spinning a dog in the air, hoping that he doesn't bite you. Do you have hands to help you get that dog on a leash? Are you throwing him over a fence? Are you throwing him in the pond? Like where are you putting him?
Where's he going?
Where's he going? And then, so the wheelbarrow. You walk up to a dog, grab the knees, lift up as if you're picking up a wheelbarrow. When you do that, a dog may let go. Or if two dogs are latched on, you may want to do this technique. If you've lifted up and then you're like trying to turn, but they're not letting go, you've got to stop. It doesn't work for that dog in that moment. So just don't worry about it. We let go of the dogs. And then now you go into the more effective thing, which you may want to go and do this as your first primary call, but again, I like to give you the both options, is now you have to choke the dog off the other dog. When you're choking the dog off that dog, hoping that dog's wearing a collar. If he's wearing a collar, you with your thumbs, you put him under the collar and you ride it up as high up to the back of the dog's ears so that the bottom of the collar is right up underneath the dog's jaw. And then you want to squeeze your hands. Obviously, we're talking audio here, so I'm going to do my best. Your thumbs are underneath the collar, and then as you squeeze your pinkies towards themselves, so both your hands are squeezing towards itself, you're going to create a choke on that dog. Mm. So you're not just pulling up. If you're pulling up, you're putting pressure opposite to where you're pulling, but you're not doing the choke. This is an air choke.
Constricting it, yeah.
Yeah, an air choke will kill a dog, but what we're trying to look for is a blood choke. You want to be squeezing this, like everywhere on the dog's collar has to be coming in together to be putting pressure onto the dog's carotid arteries. And then once you stop the blood going to the dog's brain, then they're going to pass out. Yeah. You probably got about 8 to 10 seconds before they wake up again. So you may want to, if that occurs and the dog holds a dog passes out, and then you clip them up. I've never done that. So I'm just telling you what I know.
Is that the same as how they pull a police dog off a bite? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, but the dog won't get to a point where they're blood choked and passed out.
They know to let go, yeah.
As soon, like, and most dogs, okay, we'll get to my point, is as soon as you pull up and start squeezing, that dog's going to let go. Yeah. Like most of the time, they're letting go. But the dog may, the dog may not let go from previous experience of maybe a learnt behavior. We hold on until the thing's dead. The dog may just be so jacked up and committed and adrenalized that he just doesn't even know what the fuck he's doing. So you're going to have to like assist him. But most of the time, once you're starting to choke, the dog's like, and like they can't breathe and they let go. So now you think, okay, now you've put the choke on. Thumbs underneath the collar, and you're turning your hands, you're spinning your wrists inwards to themselves. So you're really squeezing on and then pulling up, like you're holding it on. There's pressure all the way around the whole dog's neck, just like if you were to put a choke on somebody. And then you're pulling up. You want to be pulling up because if you pull back, you're going to create a position reflex and the dog's going to push back into it and then the collar's going to slip back down again and you're not going to get that choke anymore. Now you've got it too low or down his neck and then he's going to continue to breathe and grab on. So it has to be up and then like pulling 45 degrees back sort of thing. Dog lets go. And then again, what's the aftermath? He lets go. Does he reattach now because you're shit and you haven't let him get back to it because you're like, yeah, he's off. Oh, damn, now he's grabbed into a new set of holes. Now we're fucked. That's bad. So as soon as that dog lets go, you need to have a plan. And I did a dangerous dog handling course. I've done a couple of them. Did one of them with Andrew Clark. It was awesome. And one of the techniques that he mentioned is like when your left leg is going to be pinned against the dog's like shoulder neck area. And that's the same side that you're choking the dog on. So as soon as they let go, you have something to post the dog on. Which is your body, obviously, where if you're like standing over them or no contact, that dog now lets go. Now the dog's fighting and trying to get to you. How strong are you to hold that dog back? So holding the dog and posting it so that as soon as that occurs, you can kind of like use your body to be like over their center of mass. And if that's occurring, dog's grabbed onto another dog or a person, and you've come with the leash, you slip the leash around like a slip lead it up, and then apply the choke upwards. And as soon as the dog lets go, now you've got the dog on a leash, which is so much better because now you can clip it onto something. Or if you do have your hands on and then the dog lets go, hopefully there's someone there with your spare leash, because you're carrying a spare leash from now on. Every time you leave the house, you've got a spare strong lead on you. You whack that onto a collar or make it a slip lead, and at least you've got somewhere to manage and control the dog. Let's tell you about what happened at the shelter a couple of weeks ago, and it was a shitty situation, but it is what it is. So we're doing this. So I've been helping out with the girls at the shelter in terms of creating assessments, behavior assessments on all the new dogs that come in, and then reassess them when they become property of the council. And then every couple of months, maybe like every 3 months, we do a new assessment to see where we're at. So there's a folder with all the dogs' assessments. So all the staff are communicating. If anybody wants a dog, then they all kind of know where the dog's at, where the dog was, and then where the dog's kind of behavior is kind of heading towards in a way. But there was one of the dogs that they found a little bit sketchy. And they're like, oh, we don't want to do the assessment on our own. We want to do it when you're here. And I'm like, yeah, no worries. So every couple of weeks, I'm going there and helping them out. And I felt really bad because I didn't foresee what was going to happen, which meant I wasn't able to prevent what happened, but I was still there to be able to stop it from getting bad. So the dog's name was Scooby. And he was like a Great Dane. Yeah, he looked like Scooby, dude. He was like a big Great Dane kind of mastiffy something or other. Huge, right? Massive head, bigger than mine.
Like Scooby-Doo, yeah.
Exactly. And he'd been doing like a couple of like, you know, shows, has displayed some minor levels of aggression. Snapping.
Is that how he ended up there?
Not sure. I think he was, I'm not sure what, like he wasn't surrendered because of his behavior, no, but he was, but he started developing the behavior while he was there because he was an awesome dog.
Yeah.
Really cool. But he was going to get really stressed and just his behavior started to decline and he was getting very frustrated and he was targeting a couple of the girls. And anyway, so then we're doing the assessment and to be honest, everything was doing really well. I was handling him. The girls were handling him. And then I asked Jade to give him a pat. And I'm like, oh, like we'll finish up the handling of it. And I'm like, just give him that pat. And then like she walked up to the side of him. She patted him, and then like, if I'm thinking back at it now, his head dipped down for like maybe half a second before no growling, no other posturing, just kind of just went, just like lifted his head up and just grabs her arm. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. And then shaking her arm. I was like, oh, fuck. Shit. So it wasn't like, and most of the time when you see like a dog acting out and displaying aggression, it's like, oh, there's a load up, there's like this body language, he flitches, he moves, she would move weird. It was very gamey. It looked very game, like it was something that it was a desirable thing to express as well as him being
like predatory.
Hard to say. Very hard to say, but I don't know. But like in the moment of when he grabbed her arm,
yeah,
and she's wearing a long sleeve shirt and a jumper, so she's got padding, luckily, and she did awesome. As soon as the dog's now committed and starting to shake her arm, she like her reaction was to be like, oh my God, what the fuck? And then she just turned around and kept the arm real still, very calm, which allowed me to be able to do what I need to do. So as soon as he's gotten up, I'm like, oh, what the fuck? And then he had a slip lead on, and the slip lead, I pulled like a 45 degree angle into the bite up. You don't pull back. Pulling back in that moment would have caused him to continue to go to fight on her arm and to be opposing my leash. And also what I don't want to happen in that moment was for him to let go to re-grip and get a better grip on her and now to create a new set of punctures. Yeah. So So while he's there, I need to keep him on, ironically, while trying to get him off, because I don't want him to start jump. Mm-hmm. So then as I'm pulling pressure to, like, so his head is here and I've put pressure this way, but then the slip lead, because he's so big, the slip lead, like, was going to take too long to, like, choke him out, because it's like, yeah, it was too thin in that moment. I could have, like, really squeezed it on, but again, he's so tall and now he's on two legs, so I didn't have heaps of leverage on him. So while I kept the pressure on, he still had a flat collar on, so I put the flat collar, thumb under, rose it up, both in, and squeezed in, and I'm holding, squeezing, and he's gone, and he's like, let go. And then in that moment, because I've held the pressure on, I was able to just move him to the side to inspect her. He still had the slip lid on. He didn't try to fight me back. He was like, what happened? You could just see, he's like, what happened there? That's, I'm like, hectic, dude, what the hell? So I pulled him into the, and when I say what happened, they're not like, what did Panos do? He was like, what am I doing? Am I biting her? Like, you can just tell he was just like, whoa, I'm chapping his leg. Like, he was like, far out, that was heavy. So, like, I think he was, like, just unstable in that moment. Anyway, so I put him away, came back out. Luckily for her, she had no actual punctures. She had bruises, no sprains. She went to the hospital. Everything was cool. In the moment, lay her down. She went pale. She was, like, you know, starting to feel a bit of shock. Ice on it. Just reassure her. Take deep breaths, whatever. She was cool. I felt shit because I'm like, damn it, man. Like, that was, like, a failure on my part and how I saw it, in terms of I wasn't able to, like, kind of read the situation so that I could stop it and be like, hey, that was what that was. But it is what it is. This is just what it is working with dogs. I've been in conversation. Everyone's cool. We can't rehome
a dog. Down.
Yeah, you can't rehome a dog. That's aggressive of that caliber. Yeah. It's just not a, it just makes no sense to anybody, unless there was a rehabilitation center, or if that dog was displaying that behavior at somebody's home, we could fix these things and mitigate them and work towards rehabilitating the situation. But being a shelter that no rescue can take him on, because all the rescues are full, everywhere's full, the place is full. And again, just so you know, the shelter that I help out with has had a dog there. His name was Jimmy. He just got rehomed. I think he was there for 2 years, just over 2 years. They don't, it's not a high kill shelter. They're not not euthanizing dogs just for the sake of space or anything. But he's just not deemed to be rehomed. You give him to somebody and he does that to somebody, a child.
Shame.
Or a vulnerable person. Awesome dog, but that's just the reality. You can't save all the dogs. And that's a harsh truth of it all. But in that moment, that's what occurred. So, and again, they say, oh, lucky Panos was there to be able to deal with it. So, like, as it happened, I'm like, well, let's just discuss, even though it was so unfortunate what happened, let's discuss what happened so that we can learn from it. Pulling back and letting the dog chomp on you, you have to be calm and assertive enough in the moment to be able to deal with it. You're not angry, smacking, putting sticks up the dog's butt. You know, old school advice, like, stick a finger up the dog's ass, that makes them let
Jesus
go. And,
Christ.
You know, pepper in their face. And, you know, some people say, put the hose down the dog's throat and fill it up with water, like, you can drown the dog that way. Like, all those things are, like, are pretty gnarly and something that I wouldn't recommend. But there are times where, like, hitting a dog will make them let go. So it's not like it doesn't always work. So there was one situation, the first time I ever saw a dog fight, where my mate had an American Staffy, other friend had an English Staffy. They were playing. He got all over the top, grabs her collar. She trips out and jumps and spins out of it. But now she's effectively spun into the collar. Now, while he's grabbing the collar and she, the little dog, like a little Staffy, so as she's jumped up and spun, that collar's now done a 360 and squeezing her neck. She's choking. Like, she's like, can't breathe. And he's just grabbing on, like, whoa. And then we're like, whoa. And we're in the middle of the park. And I'm like, where's the stick to put up her ass? Up his ass was like my first reaction, you know, it's like 13 years ago. Because that's what I was taught. I'm like, well, from what I had been told, and again, you know, this is just information, I haven't done this, where they say if you stick a finger up a dog's ass, they don't feel it. But if you're going to do anything to a dog's ass, you use a stick or something. So, like, you bang it, bang, 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 for them to let go. I think that's so barbaric, so unnecessary. It's not even going to work. I'm like, don't put anything up dogs' asses.
Okay, now we've really diverted.
Yeah, I'm like, just stop. No, but it's a real thing. I don't know if people have been in the game for long enough. It's like putting the finger up the dog's ass or stick up the dog's ass is a thing. Mm-hmm. No, it's not a thing. Don't do it. So in that moment, I was like, I wasn't sure what to do. Now, if I knew what I knew now, I would have just choked Duke off. Easy. But in the moment, I'm like, oi, and I just punched him as hard as I could into the bridge of his nose, where, like, his nose and his skull joined. And in that moment of shock, he just let go and I grabbed him and pulled him back. Sky was there. We hung out right next to each other. We didn't make a big deal. He didn't get a scolding. We didn't like beat him up or anything. It was just that initial, but he got shocked and he's like, what the fuck just happened? And he let go. Lucky for me, that worked. Because most of the time it doesn't work. But I'm explaining here that there's so many different variables, depend on your experience level. How frantic are you? How calm are you under pressure? Do you know what to do? You know, so if you're not willing to do it, sometimes asking for help, screaming for help, someone can come and help you, you know, we could discuss this for hours about all the different situations. Yeah. Maybe I'll give you one more. I'll give you one more story.
Go on then.
So, and again, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this because it's kind of significant and it was good to explain. But if you've heard the story before, apologies. Training last year, big Doberman. He was on a slip lead but had no flat collar on. I told my clients, when you're walking the dog, flat collar stays on with the tag and details. By law, you need to have that. You can't just have a slip lead on its own. But besides the law, keep a flat collar on your dog. So if anything happens to your slip lead, you got a collar to grab. Anyway, so we're walking up and down. We're doing some, you know, reactivity, behavior modification stuff. And I said to him, adjust the collar, pull it back up high. So for some reason, he undoes the stopper to pull the slip lead up just to adjust it from being too low to be up high. Like we all know that you just got to put a bit of, like you just got to feed the fur through and just keep pull it up a bit. He's loosened it, grabbed it. And as he went to pull it up, the dog slipped out the leash and just ran to Chili. And as he's running to Chili, Chili shits himself, starts running away. And then this dobe is like trying to bite his back straps, like biting him while he's running. And I've run up to him going, far out, there's no collar on him. If there was a collar on him, I grab him by the collar, I pull him back, I lift him up. Nothing happened. It's not even a story that I could even tell you. But because there was no collar, I'm like, shit. So then as Chili kind of stopped and then the Dobie wanted to like actually give him a decent bite, I've grabbed him by the knees, wheelbarrowed him. I lifted him up, but I didn't go into wheelbarrow. I'm like, screw it, we're helicoptering. So I started like doing these circles, spinning in the air, like spinning him around.
Yeah.
And I've done like maybe four spins. And as I'm spinning, there's this huge full-size Doberman in the air, like looking at me, like it looked like a cartoon. His ears are flapping in the wind and his like teeth, he's like, what are you doing? He didn't want to bite me, but he was super confused about what was happening. But if I put him on the ground, he'd like go back to Chili again. I don't want to put Chili in that position. And we need to get this dog under control. So as I'm spinning, I'm like, give me the fucking leash. Give me the fucking leash. Give me the fucking leash. So he's like, owners run up to me. I put him down, put the dog down. And then like, I kind of grab him around the chest because I'm like over him now. Mm-hmm. But then the guy's clunky and can't get the leash on it. The dog keeps snapping at it and trying to get away to get back to Chili. So in that moment, because I'm behind the dog, I've rear naked choked him. And I've got him literally in a rear naked choke. I haven't fully applied it up high and like actually choke him out, but I've got him under that control. I'm like, just put it on him. And he puts it on and then boom, I let go. But in that moment, like that makes sense to do. If the dog was trying to bite me, I probably wouldn't want to put my face too close to his head. But if you know a little bit of jujitsu, if you know how to put a rear naked choke on, the dog's got no collar, you got no leash on you, that dog's on another dog and you want to save the day, you come up and you got to get that dog under some sort of effective control. Are you keen to do it? I don't think I'm that keen to to a random dog put my head that close to him, but the circumstances that it needs to be done. Now, I haven't said any names, so I'll just tell you what happened because of human emotions are human emotions. So in the moment, we've got the dog, he puts a slip leash on and then he's like taking it to the bushes and he's like, bah, and he's like really mad at the dog, like swearing at it and looks like he wants to give him a hiding. And I've gone up to him like, hey, bro, hey, it's all good. Like everyone's all jacked up, I'm adrenalized, yeah. Chili's freaking out, everyone's freaking out.
Shit happens.
Shit happens, right? Now, I get it. I get how embarrassed and how angry he is at his dog. He's like, you fucking piece of shit. Like you shouldn't have done that. And I'm like, hey, dude, you're emotional, yeah, stop. Like,
abusing the yell at the dog has no idea what you're saying to him.
No, look, I'm not justifying his behavior one way or another, right? He got angry, he got embarrassed, and he's like, I'm going to punish this dog. I'm like, you're not doing anything right now except for making everything worse. I'm like, it's all good, bro. It's all good. Relax. Hey, look, it's all good. Walk with me. So we just walked. Settled the emotion. He's like, sorry, man. I kind of got a bit over the top. He's like, man, I just didn't want your dog to get hurt. I'm like, hey, look, man, I totally get it. I'm not dirty on anyone. We walk. We walked, put the dog in the long lead. We did some stuff. The dogs actually kind of hung out and they played a little bit. It's just so weird. The dogs just out of control.
That's dogs, man. They're just in the moment. Dogs.
So, but like, look, in the moment, you got to do something. Don't lose your cool. Be calm, be cool. train this in as part of your lifestyle. Are you yeah. training your mind? Are you training your body? Do some push-ups, do some pull-ups, like be able to like pull someone to the ground, you know, or if you can pull someone to the ground, then you can pull a dog up off the ground, you know, like put your body to the task. If you're willing to walk a predator on the streets, even if it's a little tiny dog, you need to have something up your sleeve. Do you have something that you could utilize? You know, there's a citronella sprays that they spray probably about 2 or 3 meters and a thick stream of citronella. You know, you're allowed to use them, or bear spray. Like there are things that can give you something. If a dog's coming up to your dog and your dog's aggressive, you need to keep that dog away. You know, maybe consult with your lawyer about how far you could take, you know, defending your dog.
Not legal advice.
Yeah, like Panos told me to do this, but like you need to deal with what's happening in the moment, and then you deal with what needs to happen at court later. You know, in the moment, if you have to save your dog from being bitten or save your child from getting, you know, your child or your dog's already bitten, how far does this take it? Getting angry and freaking out doesn't help. Maybe sometimes it does. But yeah. What you need to do is like have a bit of a plan. So you may need to be thinking about this. Do some research. Look up videos about other people discussing this. I know Ed Frawley from Learburg has spoken a little bit about these different topics. And I'm pretty sure recently he put a course together talking about how to stop a dog fight. So you go. Just a random plug for Learburg. Go check them out. But come back and listen to us still. Like Ed Frawley's got some good stuff, but you can listen to us still. But check that out, because, you know, valuable advice, right? So, and just stay safe, make the right decision, set yourself up for success, and maybe think about what the worst thing that could happen and how you would deal with it, and maybe visualize it a little bit. And then maybe hopefully a couple of these stories, there's a million more stories and maybe more valid stories that I could have mentioned than the ones that I did. There's heaps of stories that I'm happy to talk a little bit more about, but it's not like, look how cool I am or whatever. Cause I've been bitten and been hospitalized, you know, for over a week with infection and, you know, and
I remember you telling me that. Yeah. Your fingernail, right?
Yeah, like my fingernail got removed, but inside the finger joint, there was an infection that almost went into the bone and blood.
You had surgery, was it?
Surgery, yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
They had to remove the cartilage from my ring finger. Wow. So just a finger bite. It's like, you seem like it's nothing. I'm like, I get bitten, you know, I've been getting bitten a lot less recently. But
I guess like it's a lot of pressure going down on one tiny little part of
it. The dog's mouth is dirty, but a lot of bacteria in dog's mouth. So then when a bite happens, it bites. And see, the nature of the reason why tetanus is a thing is not because only of the bacteria of the tetanus, but when you get punctured by something, and we'll talk about a dog bite, it punches in the outside, the top layer heals, but the bottom layer still got all that stuff that doesn't come out.
Right, yeah.
But if you get cut, it normally heals from the bottom out to the surface. But when you get punctured, it's so deep that it heals over the top layers of the epidermis, but then the lower layers is like a little air bubble of all the bacteria and shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where you start getting fucked up from. So, you know, so like the aftermath of getting bitten isn't about getting crushed bones and cut open and scared, is that now we've got to deal with infection as well. So, you know, the many layers to consider. If you work in the dog industry, you know what it's like getting bitten. It's like getting punched and stabbed at punched and cut at the same time. It's a weird punchy cut feeling. It's weird, and it does something different to your brain. If you hurt yourself on a knife, or you like fall over and scratch yourself, but a dog bite, it's just something that like it triggers your mammalian nervous system. Like, whoa, you get wired, and I think there's something to it. Something to getting bitten that like triggers an instinctive response, because I'm pretty sure our ancestors got bitten a lot. Mm. I'm assuming they got bitten and they had to deal with that. And that was probably more of a threat than
learn from those lessons. Yeah.
Yeah. And like one last thing, because I thought it was a real cool thing that I put up on a reel just yesterday. And when you guys just took it probably like a week later, was that, you know, I said something like, I often wonder, like, you know, how much dogs really affect our lives in positive ways. And then I say how, you know, it's our responsibility to teach them and protect them and things like that. But what we get in return is a love and a connection unique that is older than probably most of our culture. The connection that we have with the dog and the love that we have with them,
the bond,
is just so deep. That's been part of the human story for so long. And with that, and the reason why that came to mind is that getting bitten by a dog kind of in, if our connection with dogs are that old, then our connection with animals and nature and is obviously that old because we are nature. And it's just, it's something that, does something to you. Some people just shut down from it. They're like, what just happened? And others, you get bitten and whoom, you turn on, like just to defend yourself. So depends on how much we're talking about an attack. Is a dog just biting and a dog trying to bite and maul you? They're both attacks, just there's different severities of it. So anyway, I'm going to leave it there. Otherwise, I'm going to keep rambling on. But I hope everyone enjoyed the episode today and maybe a little bit graphic. Graphic thoughts for some of you, but that's the reality of it. So I don't want to sugarcoat it. And I want you to be strong, but I want you to be compassionate as well. I want you to be like mindful of your situation, because I could have jumped in front of that shepherd and jumped on top of him and got badly hurt and not come home to my, or maybe not that bad, but like, you know, not be, you know, the best thing I can be at home, as well as not be able to service all the other dogs that I could see. So sometimes I want you to think, don't be a hero. Be a hero if you need to be a hero, but don't be a hero for the sake of being a hero. Be smart about it. You may need to escape a dog and then just follow up with your body and get into it and try to get that dog under control. Rather than trying to impress, you know, people around you, because it's not about that. It just wants you to make a sound advice. And sometimes this is what I say to some people too, especially my elderly or senior clients, is that if that's happening, sometimes you just unfortunately have to just watch. You're 75 years old.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
You're at risk. You're on blood thinning medication, all this sort of shit, and you're going to jump in and get bitten and then get killed. Just because of some infection or something later. Like, it's just, but it's your dog, and it's tough. It's really, really tough to make those calls. But I think you should be brave, and I think you should stop the situation. But
there was one in the Cronulla Mall not that long ago, and the lady lost,
yeah,
at least a few fingers, maybe a hand. I don't know. It went pretty bad.
Well, like when we were at Rough Track,
another dog had attacked her dog, and I think she tried to intervene, and she was like a little bit older, I think, from memory, yeah. And I know she definitely lost a few fingers, at least.
Yeah, it's pretty. Look, it's just sometimes, like, look, I've been in like plenty of situations where dogs are having a scrap, and I've come in and just grabbed the dog's collar, like, that's enough. Lift the dogs up. You take that dog. Walk that way.
Yeah,
and then I'll just like continue on my. Just continue, yeah. Like, where did he come from? Or like, you know, sometimes maybe you're listening going, hey, look, the person who's dealing with the fight doesn't know what to do, but I know what to do. So, you know, but again, if you're going to jump into that, you're jumping into somebody else's fight, how much are you willing to get hurt? And sometimes it's a noble thing to do, especially if it's a person that you're trying to help, especially little people are the most important. Children is what I'm talking about. But anyway, much love to you all. And
let's wrap it up.
Until next time. Send a question in. We're supposed to do Roger's question, but we'll do that next. We've got a couple of guests lined up as well, which is going to be exciting for next week. So stay tuned for that. And much love. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Life With Your Dog. Please share with your friends if you're enjoying our podcast, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help others find the show. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook, Life With Your Dog Podcast. My name's Panos, and to keep up with my dog training adventures, tips and techniques, you can find me on Instagram at np_dog_training, my website npdogtraining.com, or my YouTube channel, Nutris Pooches.
Thanks for listening, guys. My name's Luke. If you'd like to find out more about my dog training services, you can find me at www.kizuna, that's K-I-Z-U-N-A, caninecanine.com.au. I'm also on Instagram at kizuna canine training. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.